is the poet and the poem from the Library of Congress. I am Grace Cavalieri, and I'm here with two of my very favorite poets to share their poems with you. And they are literary leaders in the community as well as writers. They keep it going for us all. So it's Sister Joy Alford and Diane Wilbon Parks. And we're going to have a poem from each one so you know which one has which voice. And here's the voice of Diane Wilbon Parks with an opening poem.
Thank you, Grace. The title of this poem is The War Within. What they cannot see are the damaged thoughts punctuated in the dark, the sweet erosion amplified, and the salt of silence broken. It all implodes and blossoms again in the infinite landscapes and riverbeds of our minds, a wilderness running through itself like tumbleweed. The quiet chaos, the war within flowering, the darkness distorted as silk sheets raised above the breastbone of a mattress. The heavy things they leave behind, we cannot lift in the dark. The sacred interruptions of love and acceptance and sorrow and the bright shadows that still hold church in us. The mind is a vulnerable thing, stretched and bent, a nomad of soft voices clothed in black dresses, echoing the silent shells that cannot hear themselves break open at night. We cannot control the unfurling thoughts, no more than we can control the disruptive greed of yellow irises, stitching their roots in the tender earth, spreading their seedlings across ageless abstraction. There are no boundaries here, only the sound of hope drumming the earth as it paces back and forth. Who is tending the wild horses, traversing the uneven grassland, shaking loose in our heads? When can we remove the pestilence from the open fields of our defenseless mind? The mind is a vulnerable thing, stretched and bent, a nomad of soft voices clothed in black dresses. And if we become dislocated from the frayed edges of erupting thoughts and locked inside the hems of our own bodies, let the flesh of our papers write us as unfinished songs.
The rich, luxurious voice of Diane Wilbon Parks. That is something to bring light into the dark for sure. Sister Joy, let us hear from you. Sister Joy Alford.
Good morning. Yes, this is titled On Faith's Edge. On Faith's Edge. This now seems heavy, pulling me to places that block sunlight. I have dwelt amid such barrenness before, learned to pierce openings sufficiently to light my way, despite the persistence of shadows. Stars ignite within me, illuminating a universe brimming with hope. This is how it begins. I catch hope. I catch hold of faith's rope and swing to plateaus made safe for landing by such searching souls as mine. Upon each new vista, I dance in defiance and am freed yet again to flourish unbound by fear. Ever mindful of traps and snares all about me, I cut my way through countless pregnant minefields, nurturing each tiny mustard seed I find along my journey, watering in the absence of rain with my sweat and tears, testifying with my truth, reminding myself and all who will hear that the sun will rise again.
This is how it begins. I catch hope. That is Sister Joy, prophet and poet, sometimes priestess. So now that I have you here, Joy, what are we doing? I mean, why bother with poetry? We don't make any money. The only people who read us are other poets, which are a good tribe. But what do we think we're accomplishing, and why do we spend our life doing it?
Well, I like to think that every now and again, we do bring another sheep into the fold, mm-hmm. and that there are persons that hear messages that they respond to, that resonates within their spirit. For me, poetry is my response to the beauty and the lunacy of today's reality. I hope to convey, well, messages of encouragement, of enlightenment, that engage and hopefully invite audiences and readers to consider new views and to discover new awarenesses about themselves.
Well, you've been doing it, Joy. You have been doing it. And I would say a purposeful life is a good way to live, because gosh, we know that fame doesn't make very many people happy. When you look at the suicides and the druggies that are celebrities, and we know that money just means people want more of it. So you give us a great reason to keep going. Diane, what is your take on this? You do so much in the world. Why take 50% of your life to put your thoughts on paper? What is it you think you're doing?
You know, it is, first of all, it's within me, and I love it, and I can't separate myself from it. It gives me the ability to touch others. The fact that this is a place where we express and expose, where we become vulnerable. Others are willing to become vulnerable. After reading the feelings, sometimes emoting with regard to, you know, whether it's joy, whether it's, you know, something we're disappointed in, disillusioned with. And when we look at the world today, we need a place to shelter and to shout, to be able to recover, to mend, to just process what's happening, and to celebrate. And poetry does that for all of us. It gives us a place to just fall and create and believe and hope.
To shelter and to shout, to fall. Oh, man. That, I wish every school classroom could hear this, because I don't think it's been said better than that. And while I have you on the griddle, Diane Wilbon Parks, read us another poem.
This is a poem that I wrote at the Antioch Poetry Retreat. And this is a prompt by Michael Brown's complex poem. So this is his, this is the difference between Galzo and Sonnet. So this is a variation, and it is entitled Into the Light. When she leans face down, I smell darkness coming. Everything gets disrupted here. Does everything get disrupted here? The light narrows, dreams wither, prayers become lost inside brown paper bags. Prayers become lost inside brown paper bags when light narrows, when the imbalance of years that tremble before us are hers. And when the imbalance of years that tremble before us are hers, river tears are silence as she reopens my wounds. And when she reopens my wounds that have not been healed, her silence deepens in me. Darkness enters. I am not in control. I cannot touch what is gone. She keeps dragging me back into her darkness. I cannot touch what is gone. I open my hands up to the sky where she has burned the edges off. I open my hands up to the sky, untangle the very root of her existence. When she leans face down, I call her by name. Depression, go into the light.
What do you think is the value of that repetition, which is so powerful? It's like a heartbeat. What did you find it helped you convey, Diane?
To really get across the, I think it really overemphasized, and it definitely, I love the rhythm of it, how it comes back. And I say it differently each time, but I think it emphasizes what the poem is trying to say. And it has everything to do with this particular situation being a state of depression and trying to remove it and trying to exercise going into the light. And I think the repetition really drives the point home.
What is the title of that form again?
It is the Duplex Poem.
That will be something for people to try their hand at. Now we're going to look at Sister Joy again. And she was the inaugural poet laureate of Prince George's County and has been president of the Ebenezer AME Church Poetry Ministry, also poet laureate of that church for, I bet, 10 years at least. She's the founder of Collective Voices, and four collections of poetry are hers: Lord, I'm Dancing as Fast as I Can, From Pain to Empowerment, The Fabric of My Being, This Garden Called Life, and Ordained Work. Joy, what's Collective Voices?
Collective Voices is an ensemble of poets who present socially conscious, inspirational, motivational, and empowering messages to the community in particular. We have been together now for over 25 years, and we have performed in London as well as here in the States. And our messages, we believe, resonate with those who are about community building, bridge building, and finding the power within ourselves.
Whoa. Well, I know you've been producing a cable show on TV for many, many years. It's Sojourn with Words. What is that?
Yes. Well, that's one of my babies that I'm so very blessed to be able to, for the past now 22 years, host and produce a show where we bring poets initially from the local area, but now that we've switched to a virtual format, we bring poets from around the world to present to viewers here in the metropolitan area. As a matter of fact, this week I will be interviewing a poet in Nepal, India, as well as another poet from Howard University. So the diversity is beautiful, and I'm just so looking forward to continuing to have these experiences where new voices are presented to our community here.
She is Joy, Sister Joy, and she's a charter board member of the Coalition for African Americans in the Performing Arts. And what is the organization called Inkwell?
Yes, well, the Inkwell is definitely something I'm very honored to have been invited to be a board member of a couple of years ago. We present workshops and do community outreach, particularly to youth who have experienced trauma or abuse, and we introduce them to the power of creative writing and self-expression in a safe place. We invite their families to be a part of our workshops. We have been doing, I believe, work that is transformative for these young people and offering them a lifeline that many have taken hold of and shown that, yes, poetry does work for them.
So of your own writing, how do you divide yourself between the interior world and galvanizing the flock, which is what you seek to do? How do you measure the input and the output?
Well, sometimes I think the balance doesn't quite work, but for the most part, for instance, I took an early retirement because I couldn't do it anymore. It was just, I was doing the 9-to-5 and I was doing the poetry and I was finding that I was not even physically getting sleep, but my passion is such that I feel a commitment to just doing the work that I believe I've been called to do. And for me, the balance of seeing the result of particularly like working with the Youth Poet Laureate Program of Prince George's County, which is just about to have its 11th annual finale and announce the new 2026 Poet Laureate, and I'll be one of the judges on that. There are just so many experiences where it's, like you said, it's not about the money. It's about believing that we're making a difference in the lives of persons that will be tomorrow's leaders, or persons who are just seeking for an answer to the insanity that we're faced with in society today.
An answer to the insanity. Who needs to say more? Let us hear from the interior world of Joy Alford.
Okay, well, this is titled, What Will It Be? And I'll just read the poem. And what will it be, that thing that brings dreams to life, that sets visions ablaze in the mind's eye of would-be champions who dare to do new things based not on charted paths, but boldness of spirit, quest for the best with test of integrity every step of the way? What will it be that breaks the mold of the old ways and views, sees the need for something new, challenges today's reality, unleashing the vibrancy of possibility based on shifted and lifted expectations? Are we willing to do the work required for success, knowing nothing less will do? What passions would be awakened by purpose previously deaf due to circumstance? There will always be voices that say, this is not the way. But will you stay the course? Commit your life force to what you know is true. A new tomorrow, one that inspires, uplifts, and unshackles, could be the prize. Let us dance to this new song. The very thing we have longed for awaits us, calls us to raise more than our voices. New choices will make the difference. Fate, that arbiter of tomorrow, no longer simply awaits our reply, but dictates that we feel the urgency, see the immediacy of need. Will we heed her call? We have a choice. Today, as we stand poised at destiny's door, the question remains, what will it be?
That's Sister Joy saying, are we really ready to do the work? Are we willing to do the work? And Diane Wilbin Parks is willing to do the work because she has a bio as long as your arm, and she is an artist, a visual artist, as well as an author and a poet and a novelist. For instance, she has two poetry collections and one children's book. And she's the co-author of an anthology of 100 poems and possibilities. I think that is just out. And I think it's already won an award. So I'm very interested in you are being an expert consultant to the National Trust for Historic Preservation. What is that?
Well, I have been, and this has been in a fortunate place. This would probably would never have happened had I not gone to Woodlawn. But yes, I have consulted with not only Woodlawn, but the Marietta House in reference to some of the decisions that have been made. And they just want someone with my background and someone who likes to speak up. And I am that person, so that's
You
how I
are. Yes,
became.
you are. And but the installation of one of your art pieces of art, where is that?
It's in Laurel at the Patuxent Refuge location, and that to me has been one of the I can honestly say one of the major celebrations in my life. I mean, who would have a permanent sign? And it is of one of my poems and one of the pieces of artwork. They combined it, and it is in the butterfly garden there.
So it's called the North Track, if we wanted to find
Yes,
it.
it is.
It's the Patuxent Research
Future.
Refuge North Track. I want to go. And I know you've been very prominent with a group called the Right Blend. Who are they?
Well, it's a group that I founded in 2018. And what I wanted to do with this group, what I was hoping for, and I believe we accomplished it, is to have very unique voices and backgrounds and cultures come together. I don't know if there are many groups like this, but the voices and the poetry that comes out of these unique poets. It teaches us, and it teaches the world if they are, if they want to hear it, listen to it, and understand that all of us are so unique in the way that we express, the way that we write, our style of writing, and the way that we read and perform our poetry is so unique. So I thought it would be a wonderful idea to bring a group together of these voices to be able to, speak at different engagements and such.
Well, speaking of voices, a really significant project is Voices of Woodmont. So tell us what that is.
Well, that project started in 2019, and it's significant because, Grace, I had never been to a plantation. I've driven by them, but I never went. And we were invited by Hiram LaRue to come there because he had a writer's residency. And when we went, I had no idea. Lady Di and I don't know how that happened, but we came in together. But something was so ever overwhelming and heavy at the same time as we approached the gate of this property. And ever since we, the Voices of Woodlawn and myself, have been writing poetries and poems to really reckon with the background and the past of America. And so we've been doing that. And it just so happens that the Voices of Woodlawn has been invited to do several workshops. And one of those places that we have moved beyond Woodlawn is the Marietta House in Glendale, which is really awesome. I have a pretty decent rapport with the director, and I tell you,
It's not
I
a
celebrated
plantation, though.
with.
That was that a plantation?
It was a tobacco plantation.
Oh my.
Yes.
And here we are in the year of 2000, and this has been the first time it's brought to light in poetry. That is
Yeah.
really a contribution. I know you've been in many journals and newspapers and periodicals all over the country, and you have just retired as an IT program manager. I
Yes.
need you, a United States Air Force veteran. And like Joy, you both reside in Maryland. You are poetry's friend. Now I would like to hear your heart's piece, Diane, with a poem.
Well, we just spoke about Marietta House, and they came up with a theme this year called the Unfinished Revolution. And so I read this poem 2 weeks ago at the Marietta House, and it is entitled Footprints of the Unfinished Revolution. I lay my shoes at the beginning of this poem, take my bare feet and step through the ancestral footprints of the enslaved. I wrap my soul around the whispers of their past, the echoes of the present, and the silence of the unfinished. I feel the vibrations of their broken words stumbling down the highly decorated walls of the Victorian room from clay-covered lips. I see the markings of their enslaved souls in the stately dining room. Such contradictions lie between the walls and Duval's desk of duality. One hand worked to free the enslaved, while the other hand held them captive. As I look around the room, I hear Duval's hard bottom shoes shuffling against the wooden floor, one foot pointed towards progress and the other in the past. I trace the footprints of the enslaved through the Marietta House and imagine their footsteps walking through me. The presence of their spirit is so strong, with the smell of mud seeping from unclaimed bones, from red bricks, from the tobacco field. I imagine their suffering as they wipe thunder from their cheeks, hell tornadoes quietly in their chest, carry rivers of rainstorms inside their unanswered dreams. I think of how strong and resilient they had to have been. I wonder even now, in 2026, as I carry their footprints inside my soul, if the whispers of their past is present, or if the world's silence is an unfinished revolution. I leave my shoes at the end of this poem for generations to come.
May we hear the last line again, please? I leave my shoes
at the end of this poem for generations to come.
I bow to that poem, Diane. I bow to that poem because some feelings are more profound than words, and you've captured that feeling. Are you happy with that poem?
Very happy with this
poem. Say what you wanted.
It does indeed.
People, I can't go on until people know you're a world-class artist, actually internationally known, and has been recognized by the greatest curators, and it now is moving into another form, from painting to wood to installations, and we're just going to keep our eye on you. I like to keep my eye on you. And Diane, thank you for that poem.
Thank you.
Joy. I don't know if you remember, but you were on my program when you were like 18. It was the first time you started writing. I'm not kidding. And you were such a baby. You were so sweet and good. And do you remember the first time you were on WPFW?
I do. I absolutely do.
I don't know if you were yet 20. I really don't. You had just started writing, and here we are again. Here we are again, all those years between us. What a pleasure. Joy, you've galvanized the forces. You've spread the word. You've brought the herd together. Now give us two poems together so we know who you really are.
Well, this is a longer poem, so if you want me to do two, I can, but you tell me. It's titled Railroad Signs. Railroad Signs. They traveled by night, so there would be no bright lights directing them which way to go. Travelers huddled in layers of sackcloth, burlap, and cotton, carrying precious cargo, corn cakes, salt pork, rice, and small children, making their way beside rivers and low brush, always encircled by a hush that pushed them forward in the night. Looking for a large broken branch leaning on the left side of a willow tree, two holes hollowed out by the passing of time. So it was made to appear. Time to cross the river here. Be like logs floating slow but sure to the other side. Be like Jesus, but wading in the water. Crossing this Jordan River with no sound. They'd be on lookout for signs and listening for codes. Owl hoots, painted chimneys, carvings on gravestones, even sunflowers planted in fields, looking for and trusting that the next station would be safe. Like countless others before, this circle of souls trusted the conductor. More than the pain of lash, whip, or worse, the slaver's lust, they trusted her to have a tether to North and to God. Truth was, without her, they'd most likely die. The freedom that burned within their souls just wouldn't let them stay in that place. That place, that plantation, that hell, where dirt, the hard ground, was most likely your bed at night, and daybreak meant it was time for muscles meant by God for hugging mothers and holding babies, but time to force those muscles into back-breaking labor in scorching hot sun or relentless soul-drenching rain. Till night came, then sleep, till it be time to start over again. Too many night sounds don't sit well with spirits slipping through to a new life. A frog's croak could come from the river, or another soul on the journey. Knowledge of bird calls unique to night air mean passengers could be safe. Memories of a mother's final embrace held sacred and permanent space in the muscle memory of sons and daughters whose tear-stained faces and broken hearts wore the promise of survival and freedom, knowing that embrace would be a never repeated but forever cherished memory. Slave mothers embrace such heartbreak, knowing their children are on their way to better. In the midst of all this, she finds moments of peace where her tears are her closest river of freedom, the only Jordan River she'll ever know before glory.
She trusted the conductor. That poem will live longer than we will, Joy. We'll go back to Diane, and then we'll be hearing another one from Joy after that. Diane, talk to us.
The title of this poem is The Promise of Poetry. It is 2 a.m. and I cannot sleep. Silence is dimly lit, and the night's eye is half open. The bright souls of restless words will not lay still in the dark. They toss and turn, shedding fresh fruit from the flesh of a black sky and rain inside me. The scent of poetry, fragrances, twilight's early blooms. I am not alone. There is a second heartbeat in the room. Both committed to the long night, both sworn to follow the feet of a poem into the wilderness, the countryside, the hillsides, all that I have, promise of poetry, and the places that I pull and peel, call and carry to find them. I have fished poems out of lakes, along riverbanks, inside a robin's nest, from displaced bones and yellow stains. I have plucked them from the fields that my grandmother planted, from the blurred silver of my mother's presence as she enters a poem, wearing the red evening as a gown. I have wandered across unclaimed landscapes within the creative waters and caverns of my mind. And at dawn, I dig up the present and dig deep for the past, excavating a path to bring light to surrendered shoulders, to usher hope and uncover the tombs of lost words, to expose the souls that lay awake in the dark, the ones ready to speak without permission. I did not know that my body is filled with poets whose spirit I carry on the weight of my tongue. I did not know that I would walk with their newly liberated souls. I did not know that these poets and a painter would worship here with voice, with joy, with song and scripture. I untwist their balled up language and take their celebrated bones into my hand. I carefully unrope the lasso from around their vocal cords and the brightest blushing from the protruding bellies of poems, and delicately place their poetic bodies in my arms. As I touch each word on paper, a soul is released from the lock of a poem, from the syllables throbbing at the back of my throat, from the unclaimed landscapes and caverns of unwritten poems, sworn to be written. All that I have is the promise of poetry.
Wake up, world. Wake up, world. There's something to hear. These women have given their lives to poetry. They are mothers. They are grandmothers. They are partners. They have led flocks. They are social activists. They're literary leaders. And we're going to have a closing poem from each one. Here's Joy and then Diane.
Okay, this is Ordained Work, the title poem from my last book, Ordained Work. After dreaded possibilities become realities, new strategies must be born. The norm of yesterday won't work. So we learn to lead and lift, embracing the gifts of faith, vision, and integrity, growing, moving as one, finding true power through unity. We must master our weapons of prayer, purpose, and memory. For just as we cannot succumb, we must also not forget. Pressing from the past, we release yesterday and are reborn through prayer, followed by purposeful acts. For as has been said, faith without works is dead. Deed can and must connect us one with the other. Now is our time to lift one another, leading with unbroken spirits, empowered and emboldened by hard learned lessons from hard won victories that cost us greatly. So today, we strive with resilience, passion, and tenacity toward goals generations in the making, confident and convicted that the work we do is ordained for such a time as this.
Faith at work. Faith at work. And now, Diane.
Title of this poem is Un, U-N, Un. Unwalk each room unbroken. Unscrew the lid from each house and let the powdered blue sky in. Let the rain dance inside, unbothered and unbound. Unbuckle the walls that climb too far up to reach, and the ones that squeeze too tightly, unframe them. Lay in the arms of a nameless night. Touch its dark fingers that wander along unknown edges. Unlearn its path and allow it to stretch into surprise. Uncarry every burden that takes up the sun. Wash clean the stones and the secrets that gather beneath. Become weightless like the moon walking the night naked. Unlock the doors past, unfind its many faces. Take each ghost, each secret, each sorrow, each love lost, and let whatever binds untangle itself from the root.
The voices of Diane Wilbin Parks and Sister Joy Alford. This is The Poet and the Poem from the Library of Congress, celebrating our 49th year on air. The series is produced by Forest Woods Media Productions, post-production by Mike Turpin, MET Studios. We wish to thank those who provided funding, the Sinipid Fund, the Rivada Foundation, Avidesha Shani, Natalie Canivore, Yongki Kim Renault, and Sandy Jackson Hohen. Our engineer is Mike Turpin, and I'm Grace Cavalieri.